play with his bow ties when he would do tzicha for Anam Zmiris. Since that time, he has grown up quite a great deal, and really, when I came to the YU based Medrash, so I was told, get to know Tzvi Savalovsky. That time he wasn't a Rosh Yeshiva yet. Get to know Tzvi Savalovsky, because one day he will be a Rosh Yeshiva, and lo and behold, it has come to happen. He has produced a variety of svarim on a variety of different issues, a sefer on Bukhairis. He just put out a very important work on Hilchos Nida. In the English language, it's a tome, and we'll actually try to make it available. There are some people who have expressed interest in it, and he is widely respected, not only in the Yeshiva University community, but really has earned a tremendous reputation for his shiurim, and not only for his remarkable breadth of knowledge, but for his clarity of presentation, and therefore it's a pleasure to have him here with us this morning. It's a great kavod to call upon Tzvi Savalovsky. My apologies if I have to leave in the middle. It's not because of Rabbi Savalovsky's remarks.
Rishus Harav, you know, Rabbi Shmidman remembers me walking up to the Aron Kodesh with my bow tie. I can remember you running around the shul. As I'm not going to say as a lot, but we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that.
That's why you're rushing
on. We do go back quite a while. I thought we would talk this morning about a topic, a sugya, that is very much relevant to halacha lemaisa. Shilas come up literally every Shabbos in this area. I've had a couple of fascinating ones just over this past Shabbos, just alone. And that is the topic of Amira La'akum. The notion of asking a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbos. Some people have a misconception that's called a Shabbos goy. Some people have that idea that, well, whatever you want to ask a non-Jew, that's perfectly okay. So the answer is that is clearly not the case. There are very, very real, intricate halachas that govern what one is permitted to ask a non-Jew to do, what one is prohibited to ask a non-Jew to do. We'll try to touch on some of the basic rules. Again, the topic in and of itself is somewhat longer than a one-hour shiur. We'll try to give a little bit of the parameters, a little bit of the guidelines to be able to hopefully, at some real life scenarios that come up really week in and week out, and hopefully be able to extrapolate to some scenarios that may be relevant in your cases as well. So we begin the sugya with the first of the Mamakomos, we have the packet on the first page, where the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Vav Halacha Aleph, introduces to us the very concept of Amir Liakum, the prohibition of asking a non-Jew to do something for us on Shabbos. So says the Rambam, Asur Lomar Lagoy Lasos Lona Malacha B'Shabbos, Afa Pisha Einu Mitzuvah L'Shabbos. One is not permitted to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you on Shabbos, even though obviously the non-Jew is not obligated in keeping Shabbos. Nevertheless, it is prohibited from our vantage point to ask him. And says the Rambam, it is prohibited even if the instructions are given from before Shabbos. We're going to talk a little bit about this as we go on, about some important issues, just to give you a little bit of coming events. We'll talk about what is that halacha about giving in a suit to the dry cleaner on Friday afternoon, giving in a car to the mechanic on Friday afternoon, hiring somebody to do construction in your house, they may be working on Shabbos. So those are all issues that come up of Amir Liakum, where the instructions are done from before Shabbos, and nevertheless, the halacha prohibits that as well. And then comes the Rambam and says, even if there's no need for the malacha to be done on Shabbos itself, I'm instructing a non-Jew to do malacha for me after Shabbos, that can also potentially be Amir Liakum. All of the above are prohibited, and says the Rambam, v'davar zeh asur midivrei sofrim. The entire prohibition of Amir La'akum is not min ha-Torah. Min ha-Torah, I am permitted to ask a non-Jew to do malacha. I cannot do malacha myself, but I am permitted to ask a non-Jew. The whole prohibition is midrabbanan. The rabbis instituted this prohibition. Of course, we have to observe this as well. We observe dinim d'araisa, the Torah laws, as well as the rabbinic laws. This is prohibited midrabbanan. Why did the Chachamim make this prohibition? The Rambam continues, Kedei shelo tia Shabbos kala be'enein v'yavo lasos bi'atzman. The Rambam at least interprets the source, the reason for this prohibition, is that lest Shabbos become light in the eyes of the people. If everything I could do is I yedei goy, I could just ask a non-Jew, turn on this light and turn off this light and carry this for me and cook this for me, do whatever I want. People are going to start to take Shabbos light. They'll think, well, this whole Shabbos thing is not so important anyway. Next thing you know, a Jew may end up doing melacha on his own. So this is at least the Rambam's reason for the prohibition of Amir Yaakov. This is not the only reason that is given. There are a whole series of other reasons that are given by other Rishonim. There were some Rishonim who maintained that when a non-Jew is doing a melacha on your behalf, we invoke a principle called shlichus, an agency. Just as I appoint an agent to sell something on my behalf, a person can appoint an agent to perform certain mitzvahs on their behalf, so too I can appoint an agent, in effect, to do malacha on my behalf. So when the non-Jew is working on my behalf, it's as if I am doing the malacha. Without getting into a long discussion about the parameters of the rules of agency of shlichus, this is a somewhat of a chiddush. This breaks some of the regular rules of shlichus. Usually the rule is there is no shlichus between Jews and non-Jews. But again, there may be other factors that go into this equation as well. Suffice it to say, that is another reason that is given for the prohibition of Amir Yaakov. There was the third possible prohibition, or reason for the prohibition of Amir Yaakov, that perhaps we are concerned that a Jew is not really supposed to even be speaking about Malacha on Shabbos. I'm not supposed to be talking about my business on Shabbos. I'm not supposed to be talking about what my plans are for after Shabbos. Even though I'm not doing any action per se, this is also included in the prohibition, what is known in Halacha as Daber Dovar, based on Psukim and the Navi Yeshayahu, that I'm not even permitted to speak about prohibited activities on Shabbos. And according to some, when I instruct a non-Jew to do something for me on Shabbos, that is tantamount to speaking about Malach on Shabbos, even though I'm not actually doing any action per se. We have a variety of reasons to prohibit Amir Yaakov, but there is no question that it is prohibited, and it appears to be quite clear that it is a rabbinic prohibition, not a Torah prohibition, which is going to come to play out for us in terms of halachic ramifications. So we have really just a very simple, basic introduction. Amir Yaakov is also what is not permitted, whatever I'm not permitted to do, I'm not permitted to ask a non-Jew to do. Now that we know what's prohibited, we have to spend most of the Shia trying to figure out what's permissible. We have to try to understand, are there any exceptions to this rule? Are there any cases that come up that the prohibitions of Amir Yaakov are lifted? So we begin with the first of the exceptions to the rule, which is a Gemara, and the second of the Mar Mekomos. It's a Gemara Maseches Beitza, on Daf Chav Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara tells us, a Meimar shari lemekhol eina minachu b'shabata. A Meimar permitted a certain medication to be applied to one's eye on Shabbos, provided that it's the non-Jew who is providing the medication. Again, I don't pretend to be an eye doctor. I don't pretend, even if I was an eye doctor, I'm not sure I'd be able to necessarily diagnose a medical condition from Babylonia from the 300s. But whatever the case may be, I'll defer to some of my Talmidim who are in medical school now. But apparently, a Meimar permitted a certain type of procedure that involved some kind of a Shabbos prohibition. And he permitted a non-Jew to do this act itself. There are some who say that a Meimar gufei kachal eina menachu b'shabta, that it wasn't the Meimar who permitted it for others, theoretically, but a Meimar himself was suffering from this eye ailment, and he actually permitted on his own body, it's permitted a non-Jew to perform this otherwise prohibited activity. So Amalei Rav Asher LeMeimar, Rav Asher asked the Meimar, my daitech, why do you think this is permissible? The Amar Ula Breder Aviloi called Tzarche Chola Osera De Nochir B'Shabbos. The Amar of Amnuna called Dover She'em Bo Sakana Omer Nochir Ve'Ose. Do you think that the reason why this is permissible is because we know that Amir Yaakov is lifted in the situation of a Chola, when somebody is ill? Now, quickly, the Gemara qualifies that we are not talking about somebody who is deathly ill, someone who, God forbid, his life is in danger. We do not have to permit merely Amir Yaakov. We are permitted to do even Melacha min HaTorah. Not only are we permitted, we are required. Whatever is necessary to preserve the life of someone, even a Torah prohibition must be violated in the realm of Hilchos Shabbos. So obviously, if we're speaking about permitting, merely permitting Amir Yaakov, we are talking about what's called in Halacha, Chola She'ein Bo Sakana, someone who is ill, but their life is not in danger. Someone who is who was confined to bed, somebody has other types of medical conditions where it's not a question of life and death, but then what's called in halacha a chola she'ein bo sakana, or sometimes we substitute the term nafal amishkaf, literally someone who has to stay in bed. Whatever the case may be, a person who is labeled in the halacha as ill, but not quite deathly ill, we do not permit any Torah prohibitions on their behalf, but we do permit Amir el Yaakum. So comes the Gemara and says, this must be the source for Amemar's leniency. If Amemar permitted some kind of an eye ointment to be performed on Shabbos through a non-Jew, it must be that he was invoking this het, this leniency of Amir el Yaakum b'makom chole. So ask the Gemara, Hani Mile, this is only true. Heichad lo mesayei b'hadei. That's only if the chole, the ill person themselves, are not assisting in the process. But you are Maimer, you are opening and closing your eye, you're assisting the process of the eye ointment being administered, and it's tantamount to you doing a malacha. So it's true that we can permit a non-Jew to do a malacha for a chole, but what right do we have to permit the Jew himself? Maimer responded that this is an old question. Rav Zvid asked this question. And I responded to him that this is different because this is misayaya. Misayaya means that I'm not really doing the action. I'm just kind of opening my eye a little bit. The real action is being done by the non-Jew, and therefore it's permissible. So what can we extract from this Gemara? So we really have two rules, two coolers, two leniencies that we can walk away with from this topic in the Gemara. Number one is that Amir el Yaakum is lifted even for a chola she'ein bo sakana. As long as the person is ill, even though not deathly ill, a chola she'ein bo sakana, we lift entirely the prohibition of Amir el Yaakum. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two is that even in a situation where the Jew is participating some degree as active in the malacha itself, as long as the malacha is primarily being done to the Jew rather than by the Jew, even that is permissible in a situation of a chola she'ein bo sakana. So two important kulas, two important leniencies that we have. Let's try now to...
What specifically is the malacha?
Very good, excellent. That's a very good question. What malach is even involved in the first place? So the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos discusses this process of kochel as a ayin. There may be a malach of tzovei involved, of dyeing, of coloring. The other possible malachas that are involved. It's unclear from this sugya per se which. The Gemara does sometimes when Marech is involved in some other kinds of creams and ointments. The Gemara itself doesn't mention that malacha in Masechet Shabbos when it discusses kochel. So whatever malacha, whatever that tricky malacha is, clearly we are permitting it b'makom chola she'ein by sakana. So let's try to extrapolate a little bit. Again, we don't know that much about the medical care of eyes in Bavel from 1500 years ago, but we can extrapolate to some very real cases today. What would this mean for us practically? Well, if you have a person who's a chola she'ein bo sakana, let's give the following scenario. You have an individual who's sick. The doctor comes, takes a look on Shabbos, and they say, yeah, the person's sick, they're running a fever, I don't know if argument take running 101 fever, we know what it is, it's not life and death, but the person's miserable, the person's laying in bed, he's a cough, he's a sore throat, whatever the case may be, and the doctor says, we really have to get you some medicine. How are we going to get that medicine? How would we go about getting that medicine? Well, obviously, we do not have the right to violate any malachas deraisa. We cannot get in that car and actually drive to the pharmacy to pick up the medicine. Or we cannot actually write a prescription. A Jew cannot write a prescription for such a medicine. Those would be violations of malachas min haTorah. And if the person was very ill and we were a question of life and death, then even that would be permissible. But when it's clear that there's no life and death, it's really just a question of discomfort, we are not permitted to violate any Torah prohibitions. But what we are permitted to do is to ask a non-Jew to do this. Therefore, it would be perfectly permissible to ask a non-Jew to please do me a favor, go drive to the pharmacy, go, you know, take my credit card, you may not want to do that, take some care, whatever the case be, whatever malachas, whatever sumer involved in asking the non-Jew to do would be perfectly permissible. I cannot do it myself, but any other malacha done by a day the non-Jew would be perfectly permissible to be done, even though it would otherwise be a violation of Amir el Yaakum. This is the chola, chola she'ein bo sakana, one is permitted. There are other examples of chola she'ein bo sakana as well. For example, a child. A young child is generally considered to have the status of a chola she'ein bo sakana, even if they're not really sick per se, but they're a little bit uncomfortable. And again, there are questions as to exactly how old is a child for these purposes. Probably depends on the child. Say a young baby. A baby has some issue, some medical issue comes up, and we have to take care of it on Shabbos. no problem. Everything can be done. Al yedei amir liyakum would be perfectly permissible. I've had on many occasions nebulizers turned on through non-Jews on behalf of children. Other kinds of things that have been done. Sometimes you have to see what's going on. So you have to learn, turn on the light. Whatever the case may be, for a child, again, a young child who has some kind of a discomfort, that's considered to be like chola, and tzorche chola are done al yedei amir liyakum. The Rishonim have an interesting chiddush. The Rishonim say that, I think the medical phrase goes, I don't know if it's an official part of your medical school or routine, but something along the lines of that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I think that's some kind of a, I don't know, was Benjamin Franklin said that? No, he said that? See, Philadelphia. So before Benjamin Franklin, the Maharam in Ruthenberg said the same thing. Maharam in Ruthenberg said that why should we wait for a person to become a chola she'en basakana? What if we could do something to preempt the person from getting sick? So the Maharam in Ruthenberg gives the following example. He says, it's pretty cold. I haven't been in Ruthenberg, I've been in some other places up in Germany. I imagine it gets pretty cold in the middle of the winter in Ruthenberg. And comes the Maharam and says, it's really cold, and the person didn't prepare enough logs for the fire on Friday night, and as the meals come to an end, he realizes the fire is going down, and it's going to be a tough night. Can we throw more logs into the fire? Says the Maharam, Chas v'shalom, a Jew should put logs in the fire. It's a malacha min ha-Torah, it's starting a fire. But what can you do? You can ask a non-Jew to put the logs into the fire. Why? What's the svara? Says the Maharam of Ruthenberg, the Gemara tells us, that people get sick when it gets cold. Again, I'm not going to discuss the medical issues. Is that true? Is it not true? Some doctors will tell you the whole thing is not true. People get sick from germs. They'll get sick from cold. Other doctors will tell you that, well, when you get cold, sometimes your resistance may get lower, and those germs that you may have been able to fight off normally, you can't. I don't want to get involved. Like there was a study in the New England Journal of Medicine. I can tell you what my grandmother told me. My grandmother told him, if you don't go outside with the earmuffs on, if you don't wear a scarf, you don't wear a coat, you're gonna catch pneumonia. So I'm sure that everyone's grandmother told you the same thing. Somehow in Europe, that they knew. Pneumonia, they knew. You could catch pneumonia. So whether it's true or not is irrelevant. The Maharam in Ruthenberg said, therefore, the Maharam said, if everybody's cold in the house, why do you have to wait till everybody gets sick? Put the wood in the fire now and beat the illness before it comes in. What's the matter? They ask the non-Jew to do it for you? Very simple. It's a cholish ein basakana. We don't want anybody to get sick, and therefore merely akam is permissible b'makom cholish ein basakana. This is the halach equivalent of a cholish ein basakana. It's to prevent the person from becoming a chola. That's also permissible a merely akam. The poskim quote this maram in Ruthenberg la halacha today. Baruch Hashem, we've moved past the point of fires, even though we have little fireplaces. That's usually not what's keeping the house warm, but in the realm of heat, it's cold. We didn't set the heat to the right setting. Now it's cold in the house. People are afraid they're going to get sick again. True, not true. Comes the Maharam in Ruthenberg in effect and says you can ask a non-Jew to turn the heat up. But even no matter what malach is involved in turning up the heat, it's being done by a guy, and therefore would be permissible b'makom chola, quasi makom chola. This is the Pesach of the Maharam in Ruthenberg, which is still practiced today. You can have the same situation, again, assuming the facts are correct in terms of the cold. You can have the same situation with an air conditioner. If the air conditioning is on too high, and people are complaining they're going to get cold. It was my first Shabbos as a Rav, and my first shul in Paramus, New Jersey. So we came, it was the end of August, and my parents came along for the first Shabbos. So they came to our house for Shabbos, and suffice it to say, I grew up in an apartment. So, air conditioners to me meant these little units that are inside the windows, then you press a button. This is the first, we live in Washington Heights, we also had those air conditioners. This is the first Shabbos ever I came to, they called Central Air. It was like a big chiddush for me. So I was in charge of setting the air conditioning on Friday afternoon. Of course, I didn't really have a clue how to set it, and I do remember what happened is that Shabbos morning we came downstairs, and it was the end of August, and I remember my mother was sitting downstairs having a cup of hot tea or something with about three coats and blankets on. It was about 40 degrees in the living room. So she immediately told me she had that mesorah that you're going to catch pneumonia, and she told me that we better do something about it. So it was as good a time as ever to meet our next door neighbors who are not Jewish, and we explained to them that we didn't really know too much about the air conditioning, but we do know that it's pretty cold in here. Can you do something about it? And they were more than happy to help. Baruch Hashem, over the years, they became our weekly Amir Liyakum, but we, Baruch Hashem, with little kids in the house, as I'm sure you're aware, every once in a while there are really akam issues that do come up. So we even had we had actually one time it was Shabbos Chalamoy Pesach a couple of years later when my youngest son was sick and Mamish had to go. I literally had to go to the hospital, and it was our non-Jewish neighbor who actually drove us to the hospital and stayed the entire day with us and waited until Chasidu Musa Olam. It all started from that little air conditioning fiasco on our first Shabbos there. Anyway, get back to that story. So these shadows do happen. And really, Yaakov, shadows really do happen. Then we move on.
The way you just told over the story, you told him by way of
Derek. Yeah, no, I was just saying, he could say it directly. If it's mutter, that's mutter. We now move on to other situations that arise, which are not really chola per se, but other situations where Chazal also lifted the prohibition of Amir Liachom. This is the third of the Mamakamos, in Gemar Maseches Gittin, and Davchesim and Beis. The Gemara is discussing, and not really Hilchos Shabbos per se, the Gemara is discussing that area in Eretz Yisrael, which is not quite Eretz Yisrael proper. It's called in Halacha Surya. I guess no big surprise, that corresponds to approximately the area of modern-day Syria. That area of Syria is a little bit questionable what exactly its status is vis-a-vis Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. The reason for its ambiguity is that it was conquered in the days of David HaMelech, but it wasn't quite conquered by the entire Jewish people. It wasn't done in the same way it was done in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, and there was a whole question about the unique status of this area called Syria. So the Gemara is discussing this in terms of different contexts, and the Gemara says that if a person buys a field in Syria, it's as if you're buying a field in the outskirts of Yerushalayim. Again, I'm not sure whether the real estate actually reflects that, but whatever the case may be, in terms of halacha, the area of Syria is the same. So they ask the Gemara, "My halachasa, my nafkamina. What's the difference to halacha that it's like buying a field outside Yerushalayim?" Amar Rav Sheshes Loma to teach us a kosher of ona v'afilu b'shabbes. The halacha is that if a person buys a field from a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael, so one is even permitted to do so on Shabbos, and one is even permitted to write the documents up on Shabbos itself. Now, if anyone walks out of the at this point, they're going to come be very mistaken. So hang in there till we explain what the Gemara means. So the Gemara starts off by saying you can actually sign the documents in order to get the field from the non-Jew, even on Shabbos. So just as that's true in Yerushalayim, or the outskirts of Yerushalayim, so the same is true in Syria as well. So I guess the practical ramifications would be, not only if you want to buy, you want to buy property in Ramot, so can you buy it even on Shabbos? If you want to buy some hot property in Damascus and they're willing to sell, so you would also be permitted to do that even on Shabbos. So says the Gemara, what? The Shabbos all could that? What are you joking? You're allowed to write a document on Shabbos? I mean, it's very important to buy land in Eretz Yisrael, all four Eretz Yisrael, but Chol Shabbos, Chol Shabbos, you can't write a document on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, no, it doesn't mean you're going to write the document. What it means is the non-Jew is going to write the document. Now, normally you can't do that. Normally I can't instruct the non-Jew to write up documents for me on Shabbos. Even though the Amiral of Kicham Shavos, even though normally asking a non-Jew to do a malacha for me is prohibited midirabanan, mishum yishev eretz yisrael lo gozer rabanan, the Chachamim lifted the prohibition of asking a non-Jew to do something in order to enhance yishev eretz yisrael. Yishev eretz yisrael meaning that we want the fields, we want the Jews to come back to the, we want the fields to come back to the rightful Jewish owners. So mishum yishev eretz yisrael, one is permitted to violate what would otherwise be a prohibition of Amir Liachol. So again, here we derive two halachas from this Gemara. Number one, to violate a Torah prohibition, to violate an Issa min HaTorah, clearly would be out of the question, even to get land to come back to Jewish ownership. But to violate, which is only a rabbinic prohibition, namely Amir Liachom, that is permitted, that was lifted by the Chachamim because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael.
You have to get
a non-Jewish, there'll be a legal document. The Gemara in Maseches Gittin actually speaks about in the first parak about documents that are authorized by secular courts, by non-Jewish courts, and you would have to write such a document. So you'd have a strange looking document. It wouldn't be a halachic document in the classic sense of the word, but it would work for the purposes of buying the field.
Point of history, that clause was used in the buying of the land of Neves Sha'anan and Yerushalayim.
I was about to tell that story.
Oh. What happens if I buy from another Jew?
No, from another Jew there's no great,
for me.
No, that's important for me to own land, but that's not really the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's the same Yishuv Eretz Yisrael belongs to him, belongs to me. Very good. So I don't know all the details of the story. Maybe you could fill in some of the details, but...
The The details are a neighborhood in Yerushalayim called Neve Sha'anan, which I grew up in. And there was a deal that they bought it from Arabs, and the Arabs were afraid to go to the Tabu, where you where you registered the land, in the middle of the week, because they were afraid they were killed by other Arabs. So the Arab condition was that it must be on Shabbat. And the Jews didn't know what to do, so they went to Chaim Sonnenfeld, and he said, are we allowed to? So, mitzvah. And then they were not sure that they, so they went to Tzvi Pesach Frank, and he says, absolutely you're allowed to. The question is how to take the money, and they sew the money into the clothes of the girl.
Well, okay. See, I don't know. I'm glad Baruch Hashem, it was worth me to come to Philadelphia just to get the end of the story. I knew the basic format of the story, but I did not know the details. So very good. Okay, good. It sounds good. So believe it or not, this halacha really does apply. The question is, can we take this halacha of in a sense, violating or lifting the prohibition of Emir Yaakov for the purpose of Yishev Eretz Yisrael, and can we extrapolate from here to any other more down-to-earth scenarios for us, per se? Does the Gemara mean to say that Yishev Eretz Yisrael is the exception to the rule, that it's such a great, such an important mitzvah, therefore the Chachamim lifted the prohibition of Emir Yaakov entirely, but we cannot conclude that this applies to any other mitzvah? But maybe we could take another approach. Maybe we could suggest the Yishev Eretz Yisrael is merely an example of a mitzvah. It's one mitzvah. There are 612 other mitzvahs. Maybe what the Gemara is saying is that the Mokom mitzvah, you're allowed to violate Emir Yaakov. So it's unclear from the Gemara. Does the Gemara mean to single out Yishev Eretz Yisrael as the only case that we permit Emir Yaakov? But maybe Yishev Eretz Yisrael is the model for all other mitzvahs, and maybe any Mokom mitzvah, we would lift the prohibition of Yishev Eretz Yisrael. So believe it or not, there is a machlokes in Rishonim about this. There is actually one opinion in the Rishonim, the Baal HaItur, who is of the opinion that Yishev Eretz Yisrael is no different than any other mitzvah. Emir Yaakov is permissible, but Mokom mitzvah. If one would take that approach, one could even just begin to think what the ramifications of that approach would be. You get the wheels turning. You know, when we start off the shira, I made a little light of the principle called the Shabbos Goy. But maybe we have to reevaluate it in light of what the Baal HaItur just said. If the Baal HaItur would be correct that you're allowed to do a Emir Yaakov for any Mokom mitzvah, so a lot of Mokom mitzvah. Maybe for anything, for any, according to the Baal HaItur, it's true for any Mokom mitzvah.
There's a huge difference between
them. Right, okay, the Baal HaItur is makel for any Mokom mitzvah. The Baal HaItur says that any Mokom mitzvah would be permissible. According to the Baal HaItur, listen to some of the coolest. I want to learn Torah. It's dark in the room. Come ask the non-Jew to turn on the light. Or, I need something to be carried. I need a sefer to be carried for me. There's no Erev. I need a sefer to be carried. Ask my non-Jewish neighbor to carry for me. I can think of a lot of tzrachim, mitzvah, and Shabbos. Look, what is a Jew doing on Shabbos and not mitzvahs? If you think about your average Shabbos day, you're either learning, you're davening, you're sleeping, you're eating. All four mitzvahs. So, different degrees of mitzvahs. So basically, all we're doing is mitzvahs on Shabbos. So it'll be quite a heter, Emir Yaakov, if we would rely on the Baal HaItur. The Poskim write that we generally do not accept the view of the Baal HaItur. The Rambam does allude to the fact that there was some who had the custom to be somewhat more lenient based on the Baal HaItur, but as standard practice, the overwhelming majority of the Rishonim did not accept the view of the Baal HaItur. They were of the opinion that Yishev Eretz Yisrael is different. Yishev Eretz Yisrael somehow is a special, unique mitzvah beyond the scope right now what dimension of Yishev Eretz Yisrael allows for that particular unique kula, but most of the Rishonim assume that this does not apply to all mitzvahs. As a general rule, we assume there is no heter, there is no outright heter of a merely act of a mafa mitzvah. Nevertheless, there is a suggestion that is made, which is actually followed in practice today, which is suggested by the Chai Adam, and then it's quoted by the Mishnah Berurah as well, that what if you have a mitzvah, what's called like a mitzvah derabim, a public mitzvah that's really critical, and here this touches on what was mentioned before, in the sense of low sase. If we don't do the following, it's going to lead many people to violate an Avera. So we have a real big tzorach, a tremendous tzorach to protect the entire community from violating something that is prohibited. Then we will lift Emir Yaakov entirely. What is the example that the Chayal and the Mishnah Berurah give? To fix the Eruv. The Eruv fell down during the course of Shabbos. We realize that Shabbos morning of Alt, the Eruv fell down. The only way to fix it is to start nailing in another nail and fixing a pole and putting up a string. Or potential malachas d'oraisa. We obviously cannot do that ourselves. We cannot be Mechal Shabbos to fix the Eruv. But what we can do, and we should do, and what in fact we do today, is we ask a non-Jew to do it for us. So to ask a non-Jew, even though it involves the non-Jew doing malachos, which would otherwise be prohibited in the Torah, It's only a Mir Yaakov, and it's a Mokom Mitzvah, and it's not just a regular Mokom Mitzvah. It's not just, I want to learn, I need a Sefer. It's a Mokom Mitzvah Shel Rabim, the whole community is going to be violating, carrying, without being aware of it, to save the Olam, to save the entire community from violating, carrying, Shaloki Halacha, we lift the prohibition of a Mir Yaakov. So we don't really paskin like the Bala Itur, but we have a little remnant of the Bala Itur Shita, and the Bala Itur Shita really began from that Gemara in Maseches Gittin. But even though we don't accept as an outright leniency to violate a Mir Yaakov b'Mokom Mitzvah, we do accept the following, and that's the fourth of the Maamar Mekamos in the Shulchan Aruch on page 2. The Shulchan Aruch and the Ramon Arachayim and Simon Shin Zayin, Sif Hei. Dover she'eino malacha, something which itself is not a malacha, ve'eino osur lasosu b'Shabbos el v'shum Shavuos. Even if I as a Jew would do this action, it would only be a derabbanan. Comes the Shulchan Aruch and says, "Mutar liYisrael loma le'en Yehudi lasosu b'Shabbos." If the action per se is not a diraisa, it's only a dirabbanan. Even if I would do it myself, it would only be a dirabbanan. I am permitted to ask a non-Jew to do it on my behalf. For who she yesha miktas choli o yetzarch ledavetzar charbei o ibnei mitzvah. Provided that there's some real need, there's some pressing need. What constitutes a real need? Either a miktas choli, someone's a little bit uncomfortable, not someone who's actually sick. Someone who's actually sick, we said before, Amir Liakam is permissible entirely. Here we're talking about someone who's uncomfortable, whatever the case may be, but they don't qualify as a chole proper. Or there's some other great need, which some posts can interpret to mean some financial need, there's some kind of a makom hefsid, some kind of a loss of money. Or mipnei mitzvah, there's some mitzvah that has to be performed. So here what the Shulchan Aruch is quoting from Rishon, from the Rambam and others, is that if two factors are present, then we will be lenient concerning Amir Liakam. Factor number one, the action that we're discussing is not a Torah prohibition. Even if I would do it myself, it would only be prohibited mid the Rabbanan. And number two, there's a pressing need, mitzvah, hefse, whatever the case may be. If those two factors combine together, then it is permitted to ask a non-Jew to do something for me directly on Shabbos as well. Then the Shulchan Aruch comes, gives you a few examples, Ketzad. Omei Yisrael and Yehudi b'Shabbos, lalos b'ilon l'havi shofar l'tkot kiyas mitzvah. Let's answer Rosh Hashanah, and believe it or not, the only shofar in town happens to be on a tree. How it got up there, I'm not going to see which kid is responsible for that. But I'm not permitted to climb a tree on Shabbos. There's an issa b'drabbanan to climb a tree on Shabbos. As a gezeira, we're afraid I may come to pull some of the branches down. So if there's a shofar on top of the tree, there's no way for me to get it. I would have to miss shofar rather than climbing the tree. But what I'm permitted to do is I'm permitted to ask a non-Jew to climb the tree. If I can find one, I'll have to do that. That I would be permitted to do. That's what we call a shvus, the shvus b'bacha mitzvah. Shvus means an issa b'drabbanan, a prohibition b'drabbanan. I'm permitted to ask a non-Jew to do something which is only prohibited mid the Rabbanu in the first place, b'makom mitzvah, that would be okay. And the Shulchan Aruch gives you a few other examples of this. Not everyone agrees, but that is the way we do, we practice. Halacha l'maaseh, we make it what's called the shvus b'makom mitzvah. Now this already becomes very important for us. This could potentially become very, very helpful for us. What if you have a situation where one is not actually sick, but there is discomfort. One is uncomfortable, and the question becomes, I'm not going to do malacha myself, but can I ask a non-Jew to do, it's not a malacha, it's a derabbanan, can I ask a non-Jew to do an issa derabbanan, b'makom mitztayer, b'makom hefsed, etc. We assume the halacha that that in fact would be permissible. Let's just think if we can give just one or two examples. I'll try to give you some examples that have come up in the past. What would be some examples of this? So the poskim discuss, actually, in Hilchos Nida, the following shaila. We know that there is a practice that should be maintained, should be upheld. It's an old practice that before a woman goes to the mikvah, so she cuts her nails for a variety of reasons, to avoid issues of chatzitza, things of dirt, whatever other issues involved and why this minig developed. But the proper thing to do is a woman should cut her nails before she goes to the mikvah. If a woman is going to the mikvah on Friday night, then obviously she has to cut her nails from before Shabbos. Sometimes she forgets. Now she realizes it's ready after lech benching, it's ready standing in the mikvah. Gevalt, she realizes she forgot to cut her nails. What does she do now? So we paskin in the following, that what we tell her to do is we should have a non-Jew go ahead and actually cut her nails on our behalf. Why is that? It's an application of this principle. cutting nails on Shabbos, if they're not being done for the purpose of making their fingers look nice, or for the purpose of beautifying oneself, just to remove the nails, just to get them out of the way, that is only an Issa midirabbanan. For a technical reason, on Shabbos, again, beyond the scope right now, that would only be a dirabbanan. Having a non-Jew do it would be a dirabbanan on a dirabbanan. We call it shvus, the shvus, and it's a local mitzvah, because we want to, in order to make sure that the tvila, the immersion, is done properly, we insist on cutting the nails. Therefore, the shach paskins, that's what we practice today, that we actually have a non-Jewish woman cut the woman's nails for her, as a dirabbanan on a dirabbanan, but local mitzvah, that would be permissible. It's interesting that there are some who question that psak based on the first sugi that we learned about Misayeya. Remember, we spoke about if I ask a non-Jew to do a malacha to me, they're doing something to my body, I'm assisting. So here the woman's putting her fingers up in order for the nails to be cut, maybe that should be a problem. So the Shach says it's not a problem, because Misayeya ain bo mamish. Just as the Gemara said, the person who opens up their eyes is not considered to be a doing the action, that's considered to be negligible in halacha, so too the woman who's putting her hand forward is also considered to be ein bo mamish. And now this question, the comparison, again, beyond the scope now, suffice it to say that's how we paskin. We paskin la halacha, that in such a case it would actually be permissible. We can apply the principle of a shvus de shvus b'mokha mitzvah, and therefore we'll be okay. We had a fascinating shalat that came up once in Washington Heights. Those who know Washington Heights will appreciate why the shalat came up specifically in Washington Heights. There was somebody who once walked to the base medrash on a Friday night, and they said that they realized that they had left their car open. They forgot to lock their car, and they felt there was a big makom hefsed. They was afraid that the car was going to get stolen. I'll tell you what happened at the end of the story, but I don't want to keep you in suspense for a while. So they were afraid the car was going to get stolen. So the question was, are they permitted to ask a non-Jew, in this particular case was, they asked the YU security guard to basically open up the car, lock the car for them, and would that be a problem of immediately Akum? Now what Isurim, what potential Isurim were involved in asking the non-Jew to do that? Well, one thing, just the handling the car itself is the issue of Mukta. The car is considered to be like Mukta, so that would be a problem in and of itself. But moving Mukta is only Midirabbanan. And here, I'm asking the non-Jew to move the mukta for me. It's a tzorech. The tzorech is a makom hefsed. Many people can say, maybe it's a hefsed meruba, significant loss of money. If I'm really afraid the car is going to be stolen, so that would be permissible to ask the non-Jew to move the mukta for me. This shadow is a little bit more complicated, because when you open up the door of a car, so the light tends to go on. Now again, depending on their model, or depending on how yeshivish your car is, your light may not go on. So this particular car, the light was going to go on. But the question is, according to many poskim, that wouldn't be a problem of Amir Liachim, because I'm not asking the non-Jew to turn on the light. I'm asking the non-Jew to open up the car. So the question is, that called a psikuresha? Maybe there's no Amir Liachim on a psikuresha. It's a big machlokas at poskim to Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman Norbach. And we were fighting it out in the base medrash that night, between me and myself and one of the other rabbanim that happened to be in the base medrash that night. So I thought it was mutter based on a psak of Rav Moshe, and he's arguing based on a Shlomo Zalman. It was also back and forth. Finally, we came to the conclusion, okay, fine. Ubi Meikel, Yeshel Hakel, you can ask the non-Jew. Well, at that point, it was an irrelevant shayla, because apparently the non-Jew had paskin that it was mutter to take the car, so the shayla became a moot issue. But in theory, in the perfect world, we would have been able probably to be moderate based on the fact that it was a shvus to shvus b'mach mitzvah. Okay, anyway, all's well that ends well, except for him. So up until now, we've been discussing the issue of Amir Liachim that's taking place primarily on Shabbos. I'm giving the instructions to the non-Jew on Shabbos. Again, the starting point is that it's problematic. But every once in a while we find the hat, we find the kula. So either we find the kula of Makom Misha Veretz Yisrael, or the kula of Makom Chola, or maybe the Shvus Shvus of Makom Mitzvah. But now we move on to another dimension of Amir Liachim, and that's the issue of Amir Liachim that is done from before Shabbos. What are the guidelines? What are the parameters? If I give the instructions from before Shabbos, how does that play out in terms of Amir Liachim? So in the fifth of the Mamakamos, it's a Mishnah, Masechah Shabbos, and Daf Yud Zayin, where the Mishnah records a machlokes between Beishamay and Beisila. Beishamay Omrim, Ein Nostin Oros La'avdon, V'lo Kalim L'Kobes Nochri, El Kadesh Yasum B'Yod Yom. I am not permitted to give animal skins to a tanner who's going to work the skins to a non-Jewish tanner, or I'm not permitted to give clothing to a non-Jewish launderer, I'm not permitted to do it, to give it to him on Friday, unless he's going to finish the job before Shabbos. So if I insist that I need the suit back by 5 o'clock and Shtia is 5:15, so that's okay. Then Beis Shammai permits it, as long as I know for a fact the non-Jew is going to do the work before Shabbos begins. Beis Hillel permits it, even if I know the Malacha is going to take place on Shabbos, Beis Hillel permits it as long as I gave it to him before Shabbos starts. So in my Shemesh, as long as I see the sun still in the sky, that means by definition Shabbos hasn't started yet. I'm permitted to give him the suits at 5:01, even though the non-Jew is going to continue to work on Shabbos. That's not my problem, not my issue according to Beis Hillel. And we pass in the Malacha like Beis Hillel. Why is that? Why does Beis Hillel permit it? At first glance, it sounds like Beis Shammai makes more sense. Why shouldn't this be a violation of Amir Liachum? So the Gemara and the Rishonim explain it's based on the following principle, that I am not asking the non-Jew to do the work for me on Shabbos. I am not hiring him to come from 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon to work for me on Shabbos. I am asking him to clean my suits. I am paying him, I am hiring him to clean my suits. And he may choose to clean my suits on Shabbos. He could also choose to clean my suits on Sunday. I have no idea when he's going to do the work. Now, the odds are I'll probably do it tomorrow, first thing, but not necessarily. I'm not instructing him, and I'm not expecting him necessarily to have it done on Shabbos. Therefore, I'm giving the non-Jew the option of working at his own pace. That is not called Amir Liachum. That's what's called Akam Adaite Dinafshik of it. That the non-Jew is working at his own discretion. Whenever he decides to do the job, he's going to do the job. That's the reason why it's permissible. If that is the case, then the post can point out, what if I come to the dry cleaner at 5:01, the cleaner's closing at the 5 o'clock, and I say to him, listen, Shabbos is about to start in 2 minutes, I need these suits back tomorrow, right after Shabbos. The minute after Shabbos, I need the suit, I'm running to Lavmacha tomorrow night, I need the suit back. That is tantamount to telling the non-Jew to do it on Shabbos. I'm not giving him an option. I'm not giving him the opportunity to do it on either Friday afternoon or Sunday. I am forcing his hand to do it on Shabbos. That becomes problematic. Even Beis Hillel would concede to Beis Shammai that that is a problem. So even though the instructions were given technically before Shabbos started, but I know for a fact that the work is being done on Shabbos, that's a problem. So as long as the non-Jew has the opportunity, has the possibility to work on his own schedule, then it's permissible. But if that consideration is lacking, then it becomes problematic. This is true with all types of scenarios of handing things over to non-Jews for work. This is the issue of giving a car into the mechanic on Friday afternoon. Now let's say for argument's sake, it's 12 o'clock in the afternoon, I have problems with my car, I need the car back Monday morning. So I say to the mechanic, listen, I'm giving you the car now, I know how long a job it is. We all know how long a job it is. It's about a 5-minute job. But labor at $120 an hour, so it becomes a very long job. He doesn't need 5 hours to do the job. He needs 5 minutes to do the job. I'm giving him that amount of time to do the job on Friday afternoon. Now, I come into the mechanic, I see he's got 20 cars lined up for Friday. I know he's not going to do the job today. I know he's going to do the job tomorrow. But I'm not forcing him to do it tomorrow. If he wants to, he can tell his other customers to wait till tomorrow. He has the opportunity to do it today. Whether he'll avail himself of that opportunity, that's his decision, not my decision. And that's permissible. As long as I'm giving them a realistic opportunity to work on either Friday or on Sunday or Monday, whatever the case may be, then it is permissible. If I'm forcing the job within these 24 hours, that's a problem. We're going to get to the Fresh in a moment. The Poskim have an interesting shiloh. What would the halacha be, this man hazeh, if I give in a suit on Friday afternoon, and I say I need it back 8 o'clock in the morning, Monday morning, I give it in a minute before the cleaner closes, and I know that he's closed on Sunday. I know he's not going to work on Sunday. What's the halacha? Am I, in effect, forcing him to work on Shabbos? I know that his store closes on Sunday. I know I need it back. I told him I need it back Monday morning, 8 o'clock in the morning. So I'm forcing him to work on Shabbos. So some posts can say, right, and it would be also, he would not be permitted to do so. Another post can say, I'm not forcing him to work on Shabbos. He can open the store on Sunday if he wants to. He wants to go to a ball game on Sunday. He wants to go fishing on Sunday. That's his decision. He's choosing to plan his weekend in such a manner, that's his problem, not my problem, and that's also considered to be permissible. Perhaps one could distinguish, why is he closed on Sunday? Is he closed on Sunday because it's against the law to be open on Sunday? Like, I don't know what the rules in Philadelphia, I live in Bergen County, it's still what they call blue laws, so many stores are not allowed to be open on Sunday. So now I'm forcing him, he's not going to break the law, so maybe that would be more chumer, maybe. It becomes a little tricky question, who would have thought? You have to learn Hilchos blue laws in order to pass Hilchos Emilei Akum to know. Comes a little bit tricky. So again, the way to circumvent this whole problem, give the suit in a little bit before on Friday, even earlier on Friday. It doesn't take that long to dry clean a suit. Proof positive. There are cleaners that do it in an hour. That means everybody can do it in an hour. He doesn't want to do it in an hour. Give it in enough time that he can do the job on Friday, then it's mutar l'chol hadeyos, even if he chooses to do it on Shabbos itself.
What about the issues of time zones? Like, you know, Arizona doesn't have daylight saving time, so you go from Nevada to Arizona, there's like a 1 hour difference.
Well, it's not really how the sun is the same. You know, time zones are just made up by human beings. We make up whether we decide to change the clock or not. It's going to be, I guess some people from Nevada probably could tell us this a little better, from Arizona, right? So you could tell us that if, for argument's sake, Shabbos starts at 5 o'clock in Nevada, it'll start at 6 o'clock in Arizona, whatever. It's the same time. So it's just a game in terms of numbers, but it's really the same time. There are some very real shailas about Emilia Yaakov in real time zones. We just had a fascinating Shabbos, this past Shabbos, a fascinating Shabbos Emilia Yaakov relating to time zones. The question was, is it permissible that was an individual in the hospital in Eretz Yisrael, and someone in America wanted to be able to speak to one of the doctors in Eretz Yisrael? It was already Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael, and they wanted to call in from Friday. Now the question is, if it's going to be a Jewish doctor that's going to pick up the phone, so it depends. If there's a medical need to call, there's some tzorach, pikuach nefesh, or something, obviously it's permissible. But it's something that's not really pikuach nefesh, it's just that we want to, you know, we want to have an easier, more restful Shabbos, so we want to get an update as to what's going on. Depending on whether the update's good or not, will affect whether it'll be a more restful Shabbos. So we want to call into Eretz Yisrael in the middle of the night, Friday night, right before Shabbos starts here. So the question is, if it's going to be a Jewish doctor that's going to pick up the phone, a Jewish secretary, whoever's going to pick up the phone, what right do I have to cause them to do malacha? It's lifnei iver. But it happens to be that particular hospital where the patient is a hospital that runs on Emir Liachom, literally runs on Emir Liachom, and they have goyim doing everything. I mean, literally, I mean, if there's a surgery that has to be done, you get the best doctor has to do it. But I'm talking about, if there are other things that have to be done that are not life and death issues, so they have non-Jews who are doing most of that type of work on Shabbos. So the shaila is that any issue of Emir Liachom? So I'm calling up a non-Jew for the non-Jewish Shabbos, but for me it's Friday still. Is that called Emir Liachom? Is that the same as giving the suit into the cleaner to I'm giving the suit in on Friday, but in the case of the cleaner, the non-Jew is doing the work on Shabbos, but it's Shabbos for me when he's doing it. Here, it's not Shabbos for me yet. It comes a very lumdisha, tricky time zone, Shaila. So the good news was, the hefter that I thought was permissible was, is that there was actually a need to make the call for medical reasons. There was certain medical information, some of the patient's case history, that had to be relayed to the doctor in Eretz Yisrael. So that I thought was for sure, but that was mamish for kuch nefesh, literally on Shabbos also. So therefore, hold that you're calling up anyway, so then you'll figure out what's going on with the patient anyway. So I thought that would be impermissible.
If there's an issue with calling up call centers,
right, that's a different query. Right? There's a different shaila that even if it doesn't involve Emir Liachom, can I call into, let's say I'm calling an 800 number, and it happens to be the 800 number's in India. So I'm calling on Friday morning, and they're talking in India. So that's the shaila. I remember I once had a shaila once, also related to a car. Remember, I once had problems with my car. I had something wrong with my car, and I had one of those warranties, you know, those extra after 36,000 mile warranties that are supposed to cover everything but end up covering nothing. So I was so excited. Well, I got $1,000 of work done on the car, but there's no question it's going to cover everything for sure. So it was Friday morning, and I had to call the number of the insurance company, and it turns out the insurance company was a Hawaii number. Now, Hawaii is a very tricky question. It's machlokes is whether it's Shabbos yet in Hawaii or not. So Hawaii may be Shabbos on Thursday night. The question is, a goy is going to pick up as an Emir Liachom on a Suffolk Shabbos based on time zones and mices. Anyway, that was the bad news. That was the good news, I guess. That was a lum de shaila. The bad news was that the particular insurance company that had promised me 2 years before they'll cover every single thing, unfortunately didn't exist anymore at that point. And they passed it over to another one. I'm still waiting. It's about 8 years ago. I'm still waiting to find the final insurance company that's supposed to pick up the tab of the 8 insurance companies before they went out of business. Well, Baruch Hashem, the car went out of business since then also. It's long gone, and I never get my money, but at least I got a nice shaila to discuss out of it. Anyway, getting back to the story. So the basic principle is that one is permitted to give things to a non-Jew if he's setting the schedule of work. But now it becomes tricky, what was referred to before. On the 6th of the Marmakomos, in Shabbos Daf Yud Zayin, Tosfos says on the spot, Mekana Yenir L'Rabbeinu Tam, would appear to Rabbeinu Tam, L'Hatir Ayde Kablonos Nachri Livnos B'Shabbos. It would be permissible to build a house on Shabbos, as long as the non-Jew is building the house. He's a Kablon. A Kablon means that, like a contractor, a modern-day contractor. I'm not telling him to work today. I'm telling him, I want this house built in the next 6 months. So I say to him, I want this house built in the next 6 months. That's another way of saying he'll finish it in the next 6 years if I'm lucky. And but I'm basically leaving it to his own discretion, his own schedule of work. So Rabbeinu Tam says it's mutter, just as I'm allowed to give the suit to the cleaner on Friday, as long as I'm giving him the opportunity to do it whenever he wants. In theory, he could build a house whenever he wants. You know how long it takes to build a house? So I'll tell you how I know how long it really takes to build a house. There's what's the name of that? There's a TV show that builds the houses fast. What's it called? Extreme Makeover or something. Okay, so across the street from us, there was a family that actually Nebuch, a very, very tragic family. They were Zocha. They won to get the schus of having the house built by that TV show. So it was a real to-do for a whole week. We had the cameras there and everything. It took 1 week to knock down the house and to build the new house. Literally, from Sunday to Sunday, they demolished one house, built the entire next house. 1 week, literally. They had about 80 people working on it around the clock, but it shows that it can be done. So we're still trying to figure out why, like, to build our kitchen now takes, you know, 3.5 years to get a permit, but okay, it's a different story. Anyway, so comes Rabbeinu Tam and says that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to build for you on Shabbos, because I'm not asking him to build on Shabbos, he's a Kabbalan. The new Lari, then Tosfos continues, I skipped a few lines, I skipped about 40 lines in those three dots, but I get to the punchline. The new Lari, the Re, after Rabbeinu Tam's nephew, so he says no, he doesn't think that his uncle was right. The Hadishar Bishmaisin Oros La'avda, and that which the Gemara permits, giving the skins to the tanner or the clothes to the cleaner, Hanu Betolush, that's where I'm going to give it to the cleaner. It's detached from the ground. He's going to take it into his own store, into his own house. No one's going to know that he's working. The lo mefarsim amilsa. No one's going to see. No one's going to realize that he's working for a Jew. Shanochi also malacha beveso. Flo yadishol sheyisrael. The guy's working in his house. Nobody knows he's doing my suit for me. And there's no issue of any marasayin or anything. And then similarly, he gives other eyes in the Gemara in Moikatan. But if you take a look at the very end, two lines on the bottom of the Tosfos, Aval Kablon is in the middle of the line, the Mechubar, but work that's being done on a house, David Bishus Yisrael, in the Jew's home, the Mefaris of Amilsa Aser, that's also Besachat Chum. If it's also in an area where other Jews are going to see it, the Aro, Yom Eschiri Yom Ninu. Nobody knows that this guy's a contractor. They think that I hired this non Jew to work for me for this hour, so it's going to be in a sense of Marisayan of Amir Liachum, and therefore the says it's also. So the halacha, we paskin like the Re, we paskin against Rabbeinu Tam, where our minhag is like the Re, that we do not permit this type of construction, ayadei non-Jews, even though it's being done through contractors, because we're concerned, what's called pirsum and milsa, it's called the Bayi Shal Yisrael.
Well, if this is the case, then it will be a difference if it's in the Jewish neighborhood, versus you have a house that you start a new settlement, nobody knows who the owner or anything.
Excellent, right, it's exactly what the Re says. The Re says it's only us, Mesochat Chum, and Ochinami, that one time I permitted this, somebody told me they had some construction that had to be done, they owned some property in Newark, New Jersey. Now again, Newark, at one time may have been a thriving Jewish community, but it's, except for the airport, that's about, that's it in terms of the Jewish part of the community. So I permitted him to do it, Okay. But we're hoping that no one in IDT is in the office on Shabbos, and if they are, they have more serious problems in this room in Tamin Re. So the bottom line is that that was the only time that it actually permitted somebody to continue construction based on this, on what you said, that even the Re would permit it. The question is Bizman Hazeh. So Mishnah Berurah has a whole discussion. Maybe Bizman Hazeh, this Chumr the Re doesn't apply. Because the whole reason fear of the Re is, I'm afraid that I hired a worker today to do the work. People are going to think that it's not a contractor type of a job. Today, when we build houses, even the Mishnah Berurah writes, and robbed it in the 1800s, you hire a contractor. Nobody walks around. Oh, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. Time to go find the guy who knows how to do plumbing. So I'm going to go walk on the streets to go find. Do you know how to put in a sink? Do you know how to fix electricity? You hire a contractor. So you hire a contractor who hires a subcontractor who subcontracts who somewhere. But everything is contracting. Everything is subcontracting. So maybe one could argue that the whole reason of the chumrah doesn't apply to bizman hazeh. That's a further shaila. Rav Moshe writes in the tshuva that we should be machmir in this bizman hazeh. Rav Moshe writes that we should in fact refrain from doing construction on Shabbos for this reason. So if anyone's in the doing construction on the homes, really the more correct thing to do, at least according to Pesach of Rav Moshe, the more correct thing to do is to be follow the Chumr version of the Shaila and really ask them not to do the work. Now sometimes you can ask them till tomorrow not to do the work and they'll do it anyway. And they'll come anyway. So that's a further Shaila. How about you have to discourage them from coming? You should try to discourage them from coming. You're not mechuyav to stand there and make a hafkanah, you know, Chil Shabbos if they're coming, but you should try nicely to explain to them that you would prefer that they not come on Shabbos. In fact, the poskim discuss the same may be true about Chol HaMoed, which becomes even more complicated because, you know, tell a guy not to come on Saturday, he'll probably be more than happy not to come. Tell him he can't show for the whole week. He'll tell you a story. If I don't come this week, I'm never going to come anymore. It's a Dav Ravin. It's a this and that. We've been there, done that. We've heard the stories before. It depends. You know, you try best. Usually the poskim say for the same reason that one should avoid. Let's say you have a gardener that comes, and a gardener comes in his own schedule. Whatever he wants, he comes. Every other week he comes. So he happens to come in on Shabbos. So the poskim say you should really tell him not to do the work on Shabbos, because that's like melechas abayis. It's not literally the bias, but it's b'shus ha'yisrael. Everybody sees the gardener coming in. People think, I hired the gardener for today. So you should really ask the gardener not to come. We have this. In fact, the same is true most probably for Chol HaMoed as well, because most gardening work really shouldn't be done on Chol HaMoed. Most gardening work is not really Dover of it. Remember when I was the Rav in Paramus, so when it was the first backyard, again, I grew up in an apartment building next to my backyard, Shilas. So when I was the Rav in Paramus, I told the gardener not to come the week of Chol HaMoed. So he looks at me and he says, wait, Rabbi, I got the whole schedule of holidays here. I got the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, I got the Yom Kippur, I got everything down. I said, according to everybody else in town, this week is free. So what's going on? So I said to him, no, it's a different, I'm the rabbi. So rabbis have, you know, it's a different, I don't want to spend all different religion. It's machlekes from the time and the rain. I left out all the gory details. But anyway, whatever it is, different sheets. The last, the conclusion of Amir Yaakov, at least for our purposes, on the seventh of the Ramakama, is that one of the non-Jew went ahead and did your type, he did your favor, and he did the malacha for you without even asking him. So comes the mission, says, not so simple. Nachri shehidlik esaner mishtamish lori Yisrael. If the non-Jew lit a candle for himself, then the Jews allowed to benefit from it. Vim bishul Yisrael Yisrael also. But if the non-Jew specifically turns on the light and lights the candle for the Jew, that's a problem. The Jew is not even permitted to use it. I didn't even ask the non-Jew to do it, and I'm still not permitted to use it for a variety of reasons, different opinions in the Rishonim, why exactly, but lemaisa, that's the halacha. That if the non-Jew does a malacha for me in a situation where he wasn't permitted to, I'm not even permitted to use it. And the Gemara Mishnah goes on to give several examples. So it's important to note that this is only true if the non-Jew is doing it for the Jew. If he's doing it for himself, then it's permissible. The poskim have a kula that what if the non-Jew is doing it to protect his own mistake? He goofed. And now he's trying to cover for himself, so it could be that's called doing it letzorech ha non-Jew, and that would be permissible. I'll give you the following shaila. Shaila actually happened to me before I knew that this kula. I knew the chumah, didn't know the kula yet. This goes back, I don't know, quite a few years ago. I was in a hotel for Shabbos, and I was sitting and learning in one of the rooms. It was Friday night, and one of the non-Jewish workers walked into the room and didn't see me learning, and he saw the lights are on, so he turned off the lights. But okay, chaval, that's it. Then all of a sudden he saw me there and said, ooh, whoops, so sorry. And he turned the lights back on again. Lam the Shoshana now. Can I continue to learn in that room? That was a classic. He lit it dafka for me, for the Jew. So l'chora, I can't use the light. That would be a problem. Maybe according to the Baal Iter, it's a Mocha Mitzvah. Well, we don't really pass like that. So he did a Mamash Malacha Derais, he turned on a light switch, put on a regular light bulb.
What?
So at the time, I was younger, this goes back over 25 years ago. So when I was younger, I knew the din, I knew the Mishnah and Shabbos. So I assumed, get off, this is Bishul Yisrael. It's a problem. I left the room and I had to find somewhere else to learn. But when I got a little bit older, then I realized, wait a second, Poskim say that he did it to protect himself. He doesn't want to get into trouble. He doesn't want to lose his job for doing what he wasn't supposed to do. So that's called not the shame Yisrael. That's called the shame ha'akum, and that would be technically permissible to actually use the lights. Again, so you have to be careful, not only in terms of what you are or not telling the non-Jew to do, but even if he does it on his own, that can potentially have ramifications for you as well. Again, so we tried in a short time this morning just to give a little bit of an overview of the basic prohibition of Amir Liakum, some of the important kulas and some of the real life scenarios, and hopefully this will enhance our general Shmir Shabbos appreciation of Kedusha Shabbos.
Sure.
Yeah, whatever the schedule is, you tell me. Whatever.
Anybody who needs to leave to catch a bus or anything, please leave. But I think
Even a Rambam is a problem.
Rem is only mutter in a very, very limited circumstance.
But what were you talking about? Was not the Derek Rem. Right. Was anything?
I apologize that I checked names. Okay. And if we could just make it a little bit orderly for the questions. Again, my apologies that I have to leave and that a little bit helps us help.
Okay. You want to take the questions? You monitor the question.
Okay. Topic this morning was Amira La'akum. How many here know who was the most famous Shabbos guy?
Harry Truman.
No? Elvis Presley. He writes that he used to put on the light for the rabbi in his apartment house. Later on, he writes that his great-grandmother was Jewish. So in other words, you have to make sure who the Shabbos guy is. that he is a bona fide judge.
That's right.
The other story that I want to tell.
Question. Tell stories later.
Just like
in a situation when you have a housekeeper or a cleaning staff or a babysitter that lives with you through the week, so her job is always to make your life comfortable on some level. So it's not the same as somebody like in your situation with the hotel. Somebody has to protect their specific mistake, but in general, they want to do what's comfortable for you. There's obviously a very fine line in terms of what happens in those situations. It's probably a very common scenario.
Right, when you have a live-in type of help, so the post can say that one is not really allowed to have them do actual malacha. Means I'm not allowed to directly tell them to do any malacha for me, and they really shouldn't be doing any out-of-the-ordinary type of malacha. If they have a type of a setup that over the course of a couple of days they have to get the following done. They have to do this, that, and the other thing, and they could choose how to work their schedule around it. So that may be called like the equivalent of Akam Osa Das Atzmo. So that would be permissible, but provided that it's clear that they understand that they're not expected to do any malacha per se today, and also that any malacha that they do doesn't draw attention to the malacha. Like, let's say, for example, if she decides she wants to vacuum. She knows she has to vacuum every third day or something. So she decides to vacuum on Shabbos, that's a problem. Because a vacuum cleaner draws attention to itself, that's called the Zilusa de Shabbos. Or let's say that's the disgrace of Shabbos. Let's say she decides that she's going to do something which is not part of her regular chores. She's going to start to wash the windows for you. She's going to volunteer to wash the windows. So that also would be a problem.
Don't need the Jews are around. If you go to even, school and she has to home and she wants to do malacha to help them take care of the children.
You mean as you loosen the Shabbos? I'm not sure that we would draw that type of distinction. The post can say what's called mashmiya kol. Anything that makes a lot of rack, that makes a lot of noise, would probably be a problem under all these circumstances.
Okay, the first case you mentioned here is about kol and ayin. And there's a case that we've already talked about whether or not a woman can do kol and ayin the kol amayin. And it discusses there whether or not how old she is and things of that sort. So why does that have to be a medical example here?
Right, well, the case the Gemara clearly is interpreting as a medical example because the Gemara is being mastered based on the heter of chola. The Gemara itself says this is based on the heter of chola. Kol einayim could either be for cosmetic reasons or for medical reasons, you're correct. The Gemara in Moikot is discussing the cosmetic kula on chola moed, in Ochinavi, but the term kol einayim just means to put some kind of an ointment or something in the eye.
I'm just curious about mail. Can you mail something in Erev Shabbat?
That's a good question. It's an excellent question. So, Me'ikar Adin, it would be permissible to mail something based on the heter that we said before. I'm not really instructing them when to deliver the mail. Now, it may be they'll decide to do all the malachas during the course of Shabbos, but I'm not insisting that it be done on Shabbos. This is in contrast to, let's say I send something overnight. So if I bring it into the UPS on Friday afternoon, I say it has to arrive Saturday morning, so then I'm basically forcing their hands to do the malach on Shabbos. That would be a problem. So the overnight something would be a problem on Shabbos. There may be certain leniencies under certain very, very limited circumstances for Shabbos discusses of even possibly permitting overnight. Regular mail would be permissible. There are some who don't like to actually give the mail, to put it in the mailbox if it's not going to be picked up yet on Friday. There are some more makbid that they'll only put it into a mailbox that still has a pickup point before Shabbos actually starts. It's a different...
But some of the mail are Jewish.
Right. That's also a question. And the question is, so in terms of that, do we have a right to rely on the rove? That we don't really know who's actually going to be doing the malacha per se. So it may be true that some guy sitting in the post office is going to be stamping, may actually be Jewish, but it's a little bit angled of a self in terms of that.
In the Eastern European settle, the institution of the Shabbos Goy was very institutionalized and generalized, you know, often for an entire Jewish street or town. It seems like an extension of the Maharani Rutenberg's heter, which seems like on a more ad hoc basis. How did they justify it, or were they relying on the heter, or what?
I think it was a combination. That I think you're correct, that very often they were relying on the Maharani Rutenberg. It probably started very often in terms of heating and that kind of stuff, which was obviously the biggest tzarech in time. The Ramah writes, the Ramah lived in Krakow in the 1500s, and he writes that there were communities that used to rely on the Baal Iter. They permitted Amir Yaakov straight out based on the opinion of the Baal Iter, any Mokom Mitzvah. But the later post can point out that it's probably not really the correct practice to follow because it really was a minority view. The Baal Iter was really a chiddush of a chiddush. It was the Baal Yataisus didn't accept it, and the Rambam for sure doesn't accept it. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't accept it. So it was a Das Yochid that was practiced in some communities.
Many have the custom that when they walk into the building, the doorman will press the elevator button for them. What's the...
Yep. So the head that was based on was also was based on this Pesachet Shulchan Aruch that it's a shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah. Holds only a Amir Liachom. Whether you're asking the doorman or whether you ask them before Shabbos, whatever the case may be, it's Amir, let's say assume it's Amir Liachom. And this is working with the assumption that pressing an elevat button is only mid the Rabbanon, which is a general question of electricity. You know, electricity that has lights that are going on, say to turn on a regular light bulb, we assume is a Malacha D'Oraisa. Other kinds of electricity that don't involve actual direct incandescent bulbs is dependent on the Chazanish of Shlomo Zalman and others about what the degree of Isser is. So those who were lenient about Amir Liachom, the elevators were based on that. They felt it was a Malacha Mitzvah, the person to go to Shul, as a big Tzorach. Again, this Kula, you know, that was given should, you know, even those who are relying on it really should not abuse it. It should really only be used under very, very, you know, limited circumstances. You're talking about a person who has difficulty walking, it's a very high floor, etc. But just stump for, you know, for people who can easily walk, it really should not, it should be avoided. And the truth is that even in terms of Shabbos elevators, even Shabbos elevators, which are clearly not an Amir Liachom issue, the poskim say there is an issue of Uvdu D'Chol involved. There is some, you know, a weekday kind of activity involved. So Uvdu D'Chol, we generally permit when it's some kind of a Tzorech, either Tzorech Chola, or some kind of a Mokom, it's something of that nature. But just down for no reason to for a person to use Shabbos elevators, if there's really, a person lives on the second floor and they're a very healthy, strong person, just down to get the Shabbos elevator. So some poskim have issues with that also.
So if the elevator, when you press the lights up,
so the question is, what are those lights? Are those lights actually incandescent bulbs? Usually not, and maybe it's a psikreshul or nichole, depending whether you really want the bulb or not. So again, those are the issues. They're merely akam issues. But in general, I remember a couple of years ago we were at a Shabbaton in a hotel where they had a Shabbos elevator. So my kids thought it was the biggest kick in the world. They would run up and down the elevator. So I stopped them. I said, "The Shabbos elevator is not for you." I said, "Shabbos elevators are for people who have little kids and they can't, you know, maneuver up the stairs, or a person who's old, whatever it is. But you were able to run around the lobby of the hotel for the last 10 hours. You can walk up the steps also. It's a proper chinuch."
So I'll jump in here. So, I mean, we spoke about how if a non-Jew is doing it for themselves, then there's already a heter. So, how far do you go? We spoke about if a non-Jew is doing that for themselves, there's certain places where it's mikil. So the question is how far that goes. Do we apply that, you know, could you, before Shabbos, you know, pay for a cup of coffee in Starbucks, and, you know, Starbucks is making coffee the same amount whether it's for you or not for you, can you go in and get that coffee? Or in a hotel, for example, where they're making the same amount anyway, can you grab a cup of coffee?
You know, there are other issues involved. There are issues of Marasayan, there are issues of Mekach Memker and Shabbos. There are a lot of other Zilzal Shabbos issues that go on.
Say or in a case where the Marasayan.
I mean, there's no real malacha being done for you. Whatever malacha is being done, there, you know, there's a common shal about the subscriptions, a newspaper subscription. Right. Is a person permitted to get a Saturday edition? Is that called a Amir Liachom? Because I'm paying another $100, so they're printing another newspaper. So is that true or not? So some poskim say it's also, you're not allowed to do that. So I remember when we lived in Paramus, so we used to get the I don't know if it was from New Jersey, Bergen County, we used to get the Bergen Record. So we used to get only the Sunday's paper. Why do we get the Sunday's paper? Because my wife figured out that the coupons that they have in the Sunday papers are worth significantly more than the whole subscription for the whole year's worth. So it was an investment. So we used to get the Sunday paper. Then what happened? Then we never read much, it wasn't anything too exciting in the newspaper, but we made a few dollars in the coupons. So then they switched the coupons to the Saturday paper. So I canceled the subscription. So I called up the Bergen Record. I had a long talk with them. I said, you know, I'm the rabbi in town. I said, maybe there's a way for us to, I'll still keep the Sunday subscription. Is there any way to get the coupons delivered separately? They said, it's too complicated, Rabbi, we can't help you. I said, it's a machoik, it's the Shema Shabbos. They didn't want to hear the lumpus. Bottom line is, we canceled the subscription. Years later, when I'm about Balabatim, we moved to Bergenfield, so he asked me the same shot. I told him, I said, I think it's a problem if that's the case, that they're really making more papers for you, but I don't really know what the facts are. So he spent the hours and hours talking to all the people at the Bergen Record, and he came to the realization that they don't print any more newspapers for one person. So whatever it is, they whatever the cheshbonos are, they print X amount of papers, and whether it's one or two more people doesn't, they don't sit there and tallying up another guy on Bergenfield ordered a newspaper. So if that's the case, then there really is no Amir Liachom. Now there are other issues with the newspaper and Shabbos. There may be issues of reading the newspaper and Shabbos, there's a whole different other issues, but to get it, have it delivered, and have it sit till Saturday night, so if his facts are correct, I don't know whether they're true for all papers, but if his facts are correct, then that would mitigate the Amir Liachom.
Just to follow up on that question with the doorman, what if you live in a building, you go to a building that has one of those automatic doors, and the doorman, when he sees you coming, comes out of his old booth in order to open to activate the door for you? Or what happens if you wait
and the person coming out is opening for their own purposes, okay, what if it's a Jewish person?
Yeah. So the question is that considered to be even nana from the malacha? That's a tricky question. Because I'm not really benefiting from the malacha. There's an open space now. So it's not the same. It's not like the case like the non-Jew lit a fire for me, so now I have light, so I'm reading from the light. Here, in a sense, I'm benefiting from the absence of a door there. So that's like a deep, philosophical kind of a question. It's like the question is right up your alley, right? Is darkness an absence of light, or is darkness an entity in and of itself? So supposing we discuss this, when I'm being nana from the fact that a non-Jew removed something that was in my way, is that even called being nana from it? I think we have a right to be mekel. Also, another svara that the post have to be mekel is that I'm not even being nana from the melacha proper. The non-Jew could have done it there, heter. Most of these doors have a way to do it with a key also. I happen not to have the key. So it could be that's not called being nana from the melacha proper. It means the door could have been opened even without a melacha being done. So that's also alam de shashayla. Maybe that's not considered to be a birli akam possibly. That's
on mail. Generally speaking, don't we rely on Nochet Aita Nafsha? I sent a thing to a courtroom, with money in it, on Friday, and that was 2 weeks ago. They can't find it.
They may be coming after you soon.
In other words, that's one end. Right. The other one, somebody asked about the electric light. I mean, the door, we were just in Vienna, we had a thing like that. We waited for people to go through. In 30 years ago, maybe, I forget. One day, I was in a hotel in Zurich, and the only way to get in was through that. So what I did is, I put my foot up, hoping to overjump the break. However, I missed it. The door slammed open, nearly broke my glass.
And if you had to call Pikuach Nefesh,
I'm just pointing out.
Be careful.
This is really, it's like an indirect rama, like nichale. I mean, it's not even a psik ratio, because what if the thing doesn't work?
Yeah.
I'm not even sure it's going to work. The non-scientists and engineers have this belief that just like a malach does something, it cannot go wrong. What are you doing science?
I hear. Okay.
I'm not even sure.
Okay, I don't know.
I'm going to take one more question.
If you can't get in and out, then at least we could stand there out all day.
Are there any situations where you have to be merames and being merames actually helps?
So remes to a goy as follows. The post can say that just a hint to a non-Jew is a problem. What you are allowed to do is what's called a remes shelo b'derech tzivui. A remes shelo b'derech tzivui means that I'm making a statement. I'm not even saying to the non-Jew to do anything. I just make a statement. It's very light. It's very light in the room, and the non-Jew picks up on their own to do so. If I say, it's very light in the room, can you do something about it? Even though I didn't say turn off the light, that's a problem. That's called the Rebbe's Bederech Tzivoy. But if I make just this very bland, blah statement, the Rebbe Shalom Bederech Tzivoy, and it's something that it's not called being Nenef in the Malach, that's why I specifically gave the case of turning off the light. If I say to the non-Jew, it's very dark in here, and he turns on the light, that's a problem. I can't even use the light that he turns on his own, so that would for sure be a problem. But if he turns off the light, so that's what, that was the marshal I gave before, I'm not really being Nenef in the Malach. Darkness is the absence of light, so I'm not being Nenef from anything. So the post can say that would be okay. So that's a very tricky thing. It has to be a remez, shalom b'derech tzivoy, not any hana from the malacha, and I can't mention malacha. I can't say as follows. Very often people do this. Sometimes when a person talks too much, it causes problems. He says like this, it's very light in here, and today is our Sabbath, we can't turn off light. Boom, that's also. What you just said is, you explained the malacha. You said what you're not allowed to do. That's the problem with Dabar Dover. So you have to be very, very careful how to do this remes. Sometimes we have the shayla. You have to give a remes, shalom b'derech tzivoy, without mentioning malacha. Very often the people who we use as our muli akums are sometimes their English may not be perfect. And between our remes and shalom b'derech tzivoy, and they're not exactly understanding what we're saying, I've seen some very strange conversations. I've been part of some very strange conversations. What do you mean? What am I supposed to do? And you repeat again, it's light in here and it's dark in here, and this it's a great remez. Sometimes it's such a good remez that they don't understand what to do. So
what if they're pre-programmed?
Yeah, so you have to be careful. The pre-program is also shallow. It becomes complicated. The remez sometimes works, but not always.
What you're saying is, in fact, you have to tailor the question to the IQ of the recipient. Because if the guy is very smart, a little bit is one issue, but if the guy is very stupid, more is actually motor.
Yes, I know, it becomes very complicated. I don't want to say anything explicitly, I'll leave it as a remnant, so whatever it is, it's really.
Thank you very much, Rav Sokolovsky. Just another thank you to our sponsors, the Kohelet School, for our Academy, Kohelet Foundation. The next Kohelet Yom Rishon is in 2 weeks, January 2nd, but I'm going to be in January 2nd, after midnight.
You know, the Gemara says you put the
air
on this side and that side, not the bowl. You're the Rebbe, you're my son.
Cut off the questions for me.